For the last few decades in music, there's really only been one big story: the breakdown of boundaries between genres and between high art and pop culture. So if Niko Muhly didn't exist, we'd have had to invent him. He's a Juilliard-trained composer who worked for Philip Glass for almost a decade. He collaborates with R&B artists, composes choral religious music, scores ballets, and performs with rock bands. And, of course, he runs a record label in Iceland. And now the hipster It Boy has composed his first opera and started at the top, the Metropolitan Opera in New York City. It is based on a tawdry internet story, a true story of sex and fantasy and attempted murder. It's called Two Boys, and Niko Muhly joins me now. Welcome to Studio 360.
Thanks for having me.
So people don't know what to call you or make of you, and so they default to indie, which bugs you, yeah?
Which bugs me. Well, I've been saying this for the last couple of years where it's like having an opera at the Met is like literally it's the least independent. It's not indie.
And how is it just as an experience working with this massive, complicated institution like the Met versus just doing a thing with your pal, the pop musician?
It all feels good. I mean, it's as is the way with things. You know, when you're dealing with a huge, complicated organization, you think to yourself, like, the minute this is over, I'm gonna go to a hut in Iceland and write for piano. You know, and then you're in the hut, and then you're like, my God, when's the Met gonna call me? You know, so in a sense, it's always, you know, the grass is greener. But the trick is that if your technique is under control, right? If your ability to orchestrate, and if your ability to read a score, and your ability to conduct, and all these things are, you just keep them active, right? Then nothing sort of atrophies, and then your technical ability just in your head, like of voice leading and how strings should work and whatever, that applies to everything.
And does working these muscles over here with Usher, does that then have an effect bleeding over into the bigger work and vice versa?
Of course. And you know, you learn things in making pop music. What I love about a great pop song, and this the song I did an arrangement for Usher, was produced by Diplo and my friend Ariel. And it's an amazing song because structurally it doesn't exactly do what you want things to do. So instead it has this kind of – instead of one kind of climactic chorus when everything happens, it has this kind of area that is sort of ill-defined. And basically there's all this kind of surging information. You say it's better if we love each other separately. I just need you one more time. And that was incredibly, I hate the word, but it was inspirational in the sense that you can, there's a way to make something that is obviously for the radio and obviously a pop song that has this very strange little structural thing that's more like, you know, in the middle of a meal, all of a sudden you just have a kind of boiling soup.
Which
you
is
know,
a great thing about what I've talked about since the beginning, this hybridization of form, right?
Genre as an idea has always somewhat bothered me because I think I like to think about it like food, where it's like we now have the luxury of being able to cook in a lot of different styles, but we don't issue a press release about it, right?
Right.
It's like
you can
very happily, you know, one night make some sad like vegan lentil thing, and then the next night you make like a carbonara, and then the next night you like experiment with something out of like
Are you a vegan or are you an Italian?
And then everyone's like, what do you think about the fact that like on one night it's Italian, the next night it's Thai? Is it Thai Italian fusion? You're like, no, I'm just living my life. You know, it's like
that's very funny. So now you have this great big fancy opera at the Met called Two Boys, which is based on a tragic true story of two teenagers in Britain and a chat room. And it sounds like this.
I want to kill him. I want to kill him. I want to kill him. I want to kill him.
Thank you. When you first heard about this weird real-life story on which you based this, this 14-year-old boy in England inventing characters online and persuading an older boy, it was all part of this spy ring and convincing that boy to stab him. Did you think, now that's an opera?
I basically did, actually. I mean, I think when I first heard about it, that wasn't the immediate kind of leap, but it's definitely one of those stories that's delicious enough for opera.
It's theatrical, for sure.
It's theatrical. And inventing all these characters, this what essentially happened was this little boy composed an opera, right? Where you have like damsel in distress, right? And that's a sort of spinto soprano. You have this the sort of menacing bass baritone. You have the you know, seductive contralto. I mean, all these things are the writing was almost already done.
Right. And the imaginary friends idea, which is usually very cute for little children, has a whole different meaning here. Given that it is not only set in the early 21st century, but the particular technology of that moment is key to how the story is told, and seems, you know, a decade later, so antique. Do you think about posterity and how in 50 or 100 years people will say, whoa, this is, you know, like horse and carriage stuff. What's going on with this opera that was written back in 2013?
I sort of don't worry about it because I think that what we learned is that – yes, the technology is just a delivery system, right? But the motor behind the thing is this sort of fundamental loneliness that hasn't changed,
right?
And will never change. And I think, you know, one of the things that gave me great hope for the not specifically for the posterity of the work, but just for the posterity of the idea was last year when this football player Manti Te'o had like a, you know, 18-month long relationship with someone.
That must have been all right when that came out.
It was a bit, and because, you know, they spoke on the phone,
yeah.
Or this physicist who thought that he was, you know, gonna meet a Brazilian model online and ended up just, you know, being a Coke mule.
We've all done that.
Well, right, exactly. But it's like maybe the technology is outdated, but actually the you know, people are still doing
sure.
it. But that having been said, you know, one of the things that happens in the piece is that the offline relationships, especially between children and their parents, are incredibly dull. And that's sort of on purpose because it's, you know, it's part of growing up is realizing that you have to sort of invent your own landscape and your own ecosystem, essentially, that has little to do with the one that your parents, you know, at a certain point when you start feeling more and more like an adult. And, you know, in America, we live with our parents until we're 18 or 19.
Or 25 or 28.
Right, exactly. And that's really, you know, complicated. And so this piece is really, really about a lot of other things. And it's not a sort of Grimm's fairy tale about AOL.
In the real life story, there is a happier ending. The boy doesn't die. Did you just have to change that because it's opera and somebody has to die?
Yeah.
Okay.
Quite literally. Well, it's also like the problem is also – If you have a little boy in a hospital bed, he either has to make a miraculous recovery,
right.
or not. And originally, actually, in an earlier draft, we had a very like Little Nell kind of death scene, which was totally inappropriate. That was very, very opera.
Yeah. Having done this, doing this, and having taken so long doing it, do you feel like, oh, I want to – I already am thinking about my next opera, or do you feel, I've checked that box, on to something else?
No, it's more complicated than that. I mean, I think it's the longest thing I've ever – worked on in terms of the process. I would very, very happily do it again. It's just, you know, it feels like sort of marathon-y in terms of
– As opposed to the sprints that you tend to run.
As opposed to the sprints, exactly.
So your music, and you've written a lot of music for having only done it for a dozen years or so. I hear it and I think, oh, I hear your old boss Philip Glass there, or I hear a bit of John Adams there. Is your ambition to be like them, somebody who breaks new ground and really defines a new genre?
You know, my view is that composers don't need to be – like Philip and John did an enormous amount of work to break away from the academic tradition, right? And that was a really hard fought and very complicated battle. An unbelievable revolution was taking place.
Yeah.
I don't think that needs to be the situation right now. Just because I think that, you know, the grouchy people who thought that music needed to be as complicated as advanced math
and difficult and unlikable,
or difficult and sort of inscrutable as an equation would be.
Yeah.
You know, that generation is no longer quick, really. So, but it's, you know, and that's fine. They and that generation did an amazing thing for us too.
Right.
But you know, my colleagues are just as happy playing Babbitt as they are playing my music, as they are playing in a rock band.
Right, exactly.
And that's and that for me sort of what that says is that, you know, of the cranky composers, the ones who wrote the most beautiful music, they're going to be fine.
Yeah.
Right? They're going to be with us forever, and there's no circumstance in which I wouldn't listen to a Carter Quartet.
Right.
But then also, you know, the people who had to fight against them. It's complicated. It really felt like the way that those composers talk about it, is it felt like a serious combat operation.
Yeah. What about right now? I mean, you have been extraordinarily lucky, extraordinarily because of your talent, successful. You are the it boy of today. Does that create some kind of pressure of, oh my God, how am I going to keep this up? How am I going to top myself?
Well, no. I mean, because keep it up is not the goal. I mean, the goal is just consistently make good work. I can't, you know, I
right. But the bar for you presumably gets higher and higher.
I guess I'm sort of in denial about what that might mean. You know, in a lot of cases with this opera too, it's like the pressure is partially on me, but mainly on the Met, because it's such a scary and amazing thing that they did this.
Yeah, but all the cool kids are coming. I ran into David Byrne the night I went.
There you go. Right. So, I mean, it's a straight, you know, what can I do? I mean, the best thing I can do is make work that I think my friends will like and make them come.
Keep doing it. Nico Muhly, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Nico Muhly's new opera, Two Boys, is running now at New York's Metropolitan Opera.